So you wanted to know about Mr. Coleman? So, one day this man came to me in 1966, and he said he wanted to make a record of Srila Prabhupada chanting. So how that happened is that he used to go to the park, Tompkins Square Park, and see Prabhupada chanting under the tree. Prabhupada would bring an oriental carpet, and he would sit on that carpet with this little, like a bongo drum, and he would play this drum, and he would sing for 3 hours. And everyone thought that this is a Swami with his flying carpet. Because at that time, you know, the Indian flying carpet, you always see them. I don't know where that comes from. The yogis used to fly around on carpets. I don't know. So everyone thought if you get on that carpet, you're going to fly away with the Swami. So everyone was trying to get on that carpet. So Alan Coleman was a record producer. He had his office at 1619 Broadway. It's about, I don't know, maybe 40th Street, Times Square, the Brill Building, it was called. The Brill Building was the home to all the whole record producing industry. And all the groups would go there to record. As a matter of fact, when Prabhupada went to the recording studio, it was a recording studio on Times Square, when we went there, we couldn't go in because there was another group that was there. Who was it? Little Anthony and the Imperials. They were there, they were recording. So Prabhupada couldn't record. That's when Prabhupada then, he walked out onto Times Square. And we went out into Times Square with a group of devotees. And, you know, all the lights and the big signs. And there was that big camel for camel cigarettes with the smoke coming out of the mouth, the smoke rings. And Prabhupada took his cane and went, "This is all Maya." And, you know, Times Square, we used to go there for sense gratification. It's all Maya. Anyway, Alan Coleman, but he was a small time. But what he was specializing in was talking records, where he would have records of people speaking. And he just had done a record of Timothy Leary talking about whatever. And it was fairly successful. So, you know, he saw, here's Prabhupada. He's in that scene, the hippie scene. Because that's at Tompkins Square Park, that we're all, we're not actually hippies yet. Hippies came a little later. But alternative people. And so he thought the Prabhupada singing was very good and he could make a record of this. So he approached, and then so we had made an appointment, and he met Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was asking him, you know, what he was doing, and he was talking about the Talking Records. And Prabhupada became very enthusiastic about the Talking Records. He thought this was a good idea, that one side of the record would be singing, and the other side would be speaking. Because Prabhupada didn't have any book out at the time. So this would be the way of, you know, giving some philosophy, not just singing. In fact, you know, when Prabhupada was invited to have kirtan, like we were, he was invited to, there was the theater, what was it called? East. Fillmore East. You know, there was Fillmore West, very famous in San Francisco. I think Bill Graham was his name. So he made Fillmore East. That was on 2nd Avenue, around 6th Street. There was a theater there. All the rock groups would be there, the Doors and so on. So there was this guy, his name was Louis Abulafia. And he was, you know, a total hippie, drug, and, you know, and he was running for mayor. He was actually, he became a mayoral candidate. You know, his platform was sex, drugs, and rock and roll. So he thought it would be cool to have Prabhupada come and have kirtan to open his show, his program. So it became a big debate amongst our devotees, should Prabhupada go there or not? Because, you know, it had nothing to do with spiritual life, but then it was a good platform for, because all the big shots would be there. And Prabhupada was very eager to, you know, advertise Hare Krishna. He took whatever opportunity came to, you know, present. And, you know, it would be better than chanting in a park. So there was this big thing, should Prabhupada go now? So finally it was resolved. Prabhupada said, I will go, but only if I'm also given the opportunity to speak. So not just the chanting, but also the preaching. So I had to go present them with that. They said yes, but ultimately they didn't allow Prabhupada to speak. Prabhupada went there, he chanted, then when they had to speak, they said, well, I'm sorry, Swami, you know, we have something else. So they took advantage. But So Prabhupada wrote this on chanting.
What he was going to speak that night?
No, for the record. He wrote something on it. Prabhupada read that. What he had read. In fact, you can hear on the record Prabhupada turning the page.
Is that the one originally with all spiritual?
Yeah. The genuine cry for the mother. Mother hurrah. So we went to record in studio. So we didn't get into the studio until it was like, we were supposed to be there, it was supposed to be at 6, but we didn't get in there till about 8. And then, with the recording and so on, and, oh, then there's the story of the drum. The day before we were to record, you know, Prabhupada would have, anyone could bring whatever instruments they wanted into the 26 Second Avenue Temple for the kirtan. And people would bring, mostly flutes and some drums and some guy with a saxophone and somebody dragged in a grand piano. Without the legs. I don't know. He found it on the street. And he pulled it. I mean, you know how heavy that thing is? He pulls in a grand piano. And it didn't have the top on. So all the chords were all exposed. And then he took a hammer and he started hitting the metal chords. And then Hayagriva had a sizzle tambourine. You know, it's a big tambourine with these little metal things. And no, they're like little, what do you call them? Like little rivets. It's called a sizzle tambourine because when you hit it, it sizzles. On all drum sets, they have them. So he had that hanging from the ceiling, and he would be hitting that. And then people even made instruments. They would take a wire hanger, then undo it, and then take bottle caps, soda bottle caps, punch a hole in it, and then string them on the wire thing, about 2 dozen of them, and that became like a tambourine. And anyway, so one evening this boy walks in and he's got a two-headed drum. We had never seen one. Actually, what it was this, they call it a mridangam in South India. It's made of wood. It's very heavy. You can't wear it around your neck like what we call mridanga is actually called coal. So this mridanga, you gotta put it on the floor and sit. So he brought this drum in. So Prabhupada came in, sat down, and he would look at the crowd, and then and he saw this drum. So he kind of indicated that, bring me that drum. So the boy didn't want to do it, because he brought the drum and he was going to play the drum. So, you know, again, Prabhupada said, bring me the drum. So then finally I had to go over and I had to tell him, the Swami wants the drum. So he said, okay, okay. So I brought Prabhupada the drum. And Prabhupada played the drum. And we had never heard such, so expertly, so enthusiastically. And the kirtan just became mad, ecstatic. So then I had the idea that the next day we were going to the recording, and Prabhupada liked the drum, and we didn't even know, you know, what a mridanga was. So I thought, well, this would be good to have for the recording. And so I asked the boy, I said, look, we want to keep the drum tonight, and then, you know, tomorrow we're going to bring it to the recording, and then, you know, you can come and pick it up. He said, no. You know, I was begging him. So he finally said, all right, tomorrow I'll bring the drum, you know, at 5 o'clock. So I said, okay. He walked out the door. And the next day he brought the drum. And we took that drum to the recording. So on the recording, you can hear Prabhupada playing this two-headed drum. You've heard the recording, the old recordings of Prabhupada Kirtan playing the bongo, which was also very nice drumming. But it was, you know, two hands on one head. So you couldn't get much melody there. So then Kalman produced the record. And that record, we were distributing the record, and I was taking ads out in the Village Voice, advertising the record. Record sold for $5. So this record actually resulted in the printing of Bhagavad Gita and also the printing of the Krishna book. Because, well, for Bhagavad Gita, you know, one day, you know, I would get the mail and then there would be orders from the advertisement. People would cut out the coupon and send in a check. So one day a letter came, we had Macmillan Company letterhead. And somebody from the Macmillan Company was ordering the record. Of course, he shouldn't have done this, I'm sure, because you don't use the company letterhead. You know, obviously he was ordering this thing for himself personally, not on behalf of the company. So I knew Macmillan Company. I was trying to get Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita published. Now, everyone refused. Ginsberg tried to get it published from his own publisher. Forget his publisher. They refused. New Directions, I think. They refused, and Grove Press, they refused. Oxford University, they refused. We tried everywhere. So, Macmillan, I knew Macmillan. I used to read books published by Macmillan. So I went upstairs to Prabhupada and I was all excited. I said, look, someone has ordered a record from Macmillan Company. What should I do? So Prabhupada said, all right, you go there, you deliver the record personally to the person, and just tell them that you have a Bhagavad Gita to publish. So I went up there, 3rd Avenue, I think it was 833. They had their own skyscraper. So I went, I dressed in my shirt and tie and suit, because I was a teacher. I had a job. So I went up there, and the person who had ordered the record, he was an accountant. He had nothing to do with publishing. So I went in there to his office, gave him the record, and I was like, how am I going to, he has nothing to do with publishing. So while we're sitting there, then somebody comes in and he introduces him. This is Mr. James Wade. He is our senior editor. I said, well, hello, Mr. Wade. Very nice to meet you. I have a Bhagavad Gita to publish. I just repeated Prabhupada's words, nothing more. He said, really? He said, I'm looking for Bhagavad Gita. In our religion section, we have Buddha, we have Christ, we have, Lao Tzu, or whoever, the Chinese. We have this one, we have that one. We don't have a Bhagavad Gita. I'll publish it. Who's translated it? Swami? Oh, from India? I'll publish it. Done. Bring the manuscript tomorrow. We'll make a contract. Done. Finished. So I went down to the temple to Prabhupada. I burst in the door. to tell him that they're going to publish your book. It's okay. And, you know, I was so excited. Prabhupada, we must have spent a year trying to get it published. So I came and I said, Prabhupada, they were going to publish your book. He said, oh, that's all right. It's like he knew all along.
From the letters, it looks like it took a while.
Oh, yeah. For production, well, because we didn't actually have the manuscript ready. Well, then they wanted, in their library, it was paperbacks. The books were all the same size, 400 pages. So we had to reduce the manuscript. So that had to took a while. Ray Rama did that. You've seen that purple Macmillan, Gita?
Is Collier Macmillan?
Collier Macmillan. That was the paperback arm. And but it came out also in hardback. But it was just the paperback edition with a hardback cover. And then they wanted endorsements. Because Prabhupada wasn't a known author, they wanted to get endorsements by known authors. And we would put their names very prominently on the cover. So I solicited everyone I knew. And then finally we got a green. We got Allen Ginsberg. We got Thomas Merton, who is a very well-known. He had written many popular books. He was, I don't know, what was he? Trappist or Benedictine or something like that. He was in the anti-war movement. And then this Denise Levertov, she was also in the anti-war. We were kind of aligned with the anti-war movement because when they would have their demonstrations, we would go and, you know, everyone would be standing around in these big demonstrations, all these people, and, you know, how long can you chant, you know, no war, or whatever they were chanting. So we would chant Hare Krishna, and oh, everybody chanted Hare Krishna. It became like an anthem for the anti-war, Vietnam War. Who was the guy there? He was a yippie. Jerry, forget his name. So, then I also solicited Alan Watts. Alan Watts was he's some kind of Buddhist. And he wrote many books. He was so puffed up that he wrote a book called The Book. So I wrote to him. So he replied, he refused to endorse Prabhupada's Gita. He said that the Swami says in his commentary that we shouldn't interpret Bhagavad Gita, but to say, to not interpret is itself an interpretation. So I was very worried because Alan Watts was their biggest author for Macmillan. And if he was going to refuse, I thought, well, this is going to maybe, they'll change their mind. So I had to bring the letter to James Wade, and he said, oh, we don't care for Alan Watts. We know what he is. He's a drunk. He likes bourbon, and you know, he chases after women, and we know he's a bogus. You know, they saw Prabhupada was genuine. So, you know, he discarded that. And then, so the book was published. That was in 1968. In the fall, it must have been October. That was the first book. So, then they had the, there's reviewing services. The biggest one was called Kirkus Reviewing Service. And what they do, the new books that come out, they write reviews. And they publish their in a kind of newsletter. So that season, there were three Bhagavad Gitas published by different publishers. One, he was a professor at the University of Hawaii, had this East Asian studies or something. And then someone else did. And so they reviewed all three. And they liked one. The one that it was done by some poet. And they said, oh, how poetical the translation is. And then they liked the... Hare Krishna. They like the the one done by the professor. It was very scholarly. And the one they didn't like was Prabhupada's. They said it's too much Krishna consciousness. Every page, Krishna consciousness, Krishna consciousness. It's too much. So Prabhupada liked that. He said, oh, this is very good review. They've understood. And of course, what to do, the libraries, this newsletter that of all their, they would send it out to every library in America. And the libraries would order books just on whatever was reviewed in their service, whether it was negative, positive, it didn't matter. The fact that it was reviewed was enough endorsement. So Prabhupada's Gita was in practically every library in America.
They were read to you or Macmillan's book?
For Macmillan. It was Macmillan's book. Of course, Macmillan, they were very smart. They saw that we would, ISKCON would be ordering the books, as a wholesaler, for resale. And, we would order thousands of copies. And in that way, they acted like a vanity press. They have these vanity presses where the author, where you can't get your book published by a publisher, you go to a vanity press and the author pays to have his book published. And very expensive. So in that way the book went out. Then the record was called Krishna Consciousness, and I sent a few boxes to London, to Mukunda, and I remember packing them up in this. They had it was called a mail sack, where you could fill a sack with whatever you wanted and whatever weight, and if it fitted in the sack, then they would send it as a flat rate. So I think I fit about 3 boxes, 20 records in a box, and sent them off to London. And Mukunda, he would distribute them to the head shops in London. And somehow George Harrison got one. I don't know exactly how. But then, the story how they played the record. The record was very popular. We had, in New York, there was a radio station, alternative radio station, WBAI. And there was a disc jockey. He had a show from something like 10 in the evening till 6 in the morning. And he would play all these kind of avant-garde things and alternative things. It was a very popular radio show. People would stay up all night listening to him. So Garga Muni brought him the record, and he played the record nonstop. From 10 in the evening till 6 in the morning, for 8 hours. Just Hare Krishna. And everyone, all the hippies, they're all on their drug trips and everything. Because we would get them in the morning, for the morning class. The morning class was at 7 o'clock. All the hippies would come in. They would had been up all night on their trips. And then, you have to re-enter. So they, for re-entry, they would come to the temple. And, Prabhupada would give the morning class. And what they would do, they would usually sit in the rear. And at the end of the class, I turn around and all of them were stretched out on the floor sleeping. Every day, they're all sleeping. So I guess they got some benefit. I hope so. Must have been an Indian restaurant. We wouldn't go to a other restaurant. Yeah, Coleman became attracted. He and his wife, Mrs. Coleman, they became very attracted to Prabhupada. They became, you know, practically devotees. And of course, you know, then I lost contact with them. You know, this was 1966. So then in about 1996, 1997, I was living in Miami with Garga Mooney, North Miami Beach, and I went to see someone about some computer. He was making some labels for us. We were doing the videos and things. So his house was in an area that I was very unfamiliar with. So I went to see him, and then when I was leaving, then I was driving and I got lost. I didn't know where I was. So I just drove to on a street to a stop sign. I stopped the car and I just kind of sat there trying to figure out where to go. And then this car pulls up beside me. And there's a lady in the passenger seat, and she says, "Brahmananda?" And it was Mr. and Mrs. Coleman. They also are living in Miami. They have a very nice house, North Miami Beach. So we reunited. They had all the papers and everything from the temples would order records from him, you know. And they would always ask for credit. Because the records were the only thing we had to distribute, so they would distribute the record and spend the money on, you know, other things, and then they would need more records, but they had no money. Anyway, so then this one record went to George Harrison, and the Beatles, they played it. You know the story, there's two stories. One, they drove across Europe from Spain or France and some. No, the one that they were on a sailboat in the Greek islands, and they had a record player, and they just played that record nonstop for like 3 days or something. And they were just chanting. So, of course, ultimately, you know, George financed the Krishna book. So the Krishna book came from that record. And then another interesting thing is Prabhupada, in 1967, when Prabhupada came back to Vrindavan, you know, Prabhupada had a stroke and you know, I had to hospitalize him, and then, you know, he tried to recover and really couldn't recover, went to San Francisco, and so then Prabhupada said, well, I'll just go back to Vrindavan. Prabhupada thought he would not come back, but he didn't tell us at that time. So Prabhupada came back, you know, with Kirtananda. So one thing Prabhupada said, he told me to get a record player, but a battery-operated record player, that he wanted to take it with him to Vrindavan, because he knew, you know, there's no electricity in Vrindavan. I never heard of a battery-operated record player, but I found one. And Prabhupada brought that record player, and when Prabhupada was staying in Radha-Damodar, when people would come to see Prabhupada at Radha-Damodar, Prabhupada would play the record for them. And they were all amazed. You know, they had never heard, you know, it's a very well produced record. And Prabhupada would play all the chanting, and they would say, oh, very nice, thank you. And then they would want to leave. So, oh, no, wait, there's the other side. And then they had to sit and listen to Prabhupada preaching. That was important. Yeah.
What was the definitive moment where Prabhupada really captured your heart?
I think it was the first time I saw him. It was very memorable when a friend of mine, my best friend, he was my roommate in college, he had gone to a kirtan, and he came to my apartment. I was living on 6th Street, very near to 1st Street, within walking distance. He came in, but I didn't know that Prabhupada was there. But he came and he told me, oh, I've been to this Swami. We used to go to, there was another Swami in New York, the Ramakrishna Swami. We used to go together to see him. So he said, oh, I found a new Swami. Oh, he does singing and dancing. You know, we always thought that Indian spirituality meant, you know, meditation, not singing and dancing. So he said, yeah, he has singing and dancing. And Allen Ginsberg was there. Allen Ginsberg was our hero. Of course, nowadays people don't know Allen Ginsberg. Huh? What?
I still have a copy of Colin.
You do? What was it? I saw the best minds of my generation wandering through the naked streets looking for an angry fix. Yeah, that became like a manifesto for a generation. good. We don't present Allen Ginsberg so much. Now they make movies, they're making movies of Allen Ginsberg, just showing him to be, a gay, very gross. But he did, he chanted. Prabhupada asked him to chant. He would give poetry readings at the universities and so on. And Prabhupada asked him to chant, and he did that. He had a little harmonium. He even went on TV, some big show, and he chanted. Oh yeah, so then the next day I went. So I went, I sat in the rear, and then the door opened, the side door opened, and Prabhupada walked in. And for some reason Prabhupada, he stopped, and he looked at the audience. Usually he would walk in and then just get up on, there was like a little platform for him to sit on. And, but that evening he stopped and he looked right at me and I looked at him. And, I was just, astounded by his, it was August evening, very, very hot, and Prabhupada, there was like perspiration, he was like glistening, and yellow, Prabhupada seemed very yellow, with the robes, he had his khadi, cotton khadi from Vrindavan, he was wearing, it was no kurta, just top cloth. And his features, elongated head and elongated ears and the eyes. So, we had seen, I knew pictures of Buddha. So I thought, this is Buddha. He looks just like Buddha. The Buddha has come to New York City. And that, no. So, I didn't grasp so much the lecture, but the chanting made a big impression. And when I left, I was walking down the street and I was singing to myself. But I didn't capture the tune so well. So I would sing. So the last two Hari Haris didn't fit in to my tune. But I went over to Washington Square. That's what people did that in the evenings, to cool off. In the summer heat in the evening, they would sit around the fountain in Washington Square and everybody would be passing, marijuana cigarettes. So somebody passed me one and I said, no, tonight I'm not going to smoke. I got something better than, yeah.
Was that just Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays?
Yeah, in the evening, yeah. Well, I was very ripe. I mean, I was in a perfect situation to meet Prabhupada. Because It started in 1964. I went to India, and I went to India on a ship, on a freighter. My father got me a job in the Merchant Marine, and that ship went to India to deliver powdered milk, a gift from the American government. And so then we, you know, then we sailed to Madras, and, you know, I got, India had a tremendous effect upon me. And I started immediately adopting Indian ways. And I bought a lungi and sandals, and then I learned how to smoke cigarettes, Indian style. They don't do it anymore, but at that time, what you do is you put the cigarette like this, and you like this. And the idea, it's very sattvic, that the cigarette shouldn't touch your lip. Why are you laughing? Oh, when I went back to America, to New York, to the university, you know, my friends, I was smoking like this. They thought this is the coolest thing they've ever seen. I was the coolest guy on campus. No, I'd wear the lungi and the sandals, and then I would go to Indian restaurants, and I'd go to Ali Akbar Khan concerts, and then I did my paper on Gandhi and in the history, and then I did my paper on Tagore in literature, and then I took a philosophy of religion course. I did my paper on Hinduism. It was, we had to do, it was an oral term paper where you had to speak it in front of the class instead of writing it. So I did Hinduism. I had bought when I was in India, I was only there for about 3 weeks. And then I flew back because I had to resume classes. And I bought a picture of Shiva and one of Ganesh. So in that philosophy religion course, I was explaining who Shiva was and who Ganesh was. I mean, I didn't know anything. But the professor said I gave the best paper of the whole class. And of course then, so then I took a course in Eastern literature, and, you know, we studied Bhagavad Gita. So I was reading Bhagavad Gita, and so as a result of that, then I knew I had to find a guru. So I was looking, how am I going to find a guru? Because I took that course to kind of live, you know, Bhagavad Gita. Not just to study it. And then my idea was to go to India and take postgraduate study in India and to become a professor of Hinduism. And I applied for a Fulbright scholarship, and I had to go to the UNESCO, United Nations Education, and so filling out the application. So I had to choose an institution in India to go. So they gave me a list of all higher education institutions. So I went through the list. You know, there was Banaras University, Bombay University, University of Delhi, and then there's this one, Institute of Oriental Philosophy. I said, wow, that's just what I'm interested in. And it was in this place, I couldn't pronounce it, something, Vrinda something, I mean, I didn't know what it was. And that was Swami Bhana across the street. Can you imagine if I hadn't met Prabhupada, I would be across the street. So anyway, I was taking this course, so I was looking for a guru, and I said, how to find a guru? So there was one boy in the class, he was very well-read, very knowledgeable, and I was very impressed with, so I started hanging out with him that he can become my guru. So then one day he introduced me to his girlfriend. I said, well, how can a guru have a girlfriend? So then that was that. So I was actually walking around with a copy of Bhagavad Gita in my hip pocket. And I would go to Tompkins Square Park and I would sit on the bench and, you know, where's my guru? That's where I was. And the guru came. So when I was coming early on there, maybe the second or third time, one of the boys there, he was a Buddhist. He invited me to his apartment and asked me what my plan was. And I was telling him, well, I'm going to go to India and study, become a professor. He says, why go to India when India has come to New York? And I said, you know, you're right. The Swami, he's India all the way. Because see, I had gone with my friend, I had gone to this Ramakrishna Swami, and actually I had surrendered to him. He was Swami Nikalananda. And, you know, but their style is, you know, I would go up and see him in his apartments, and he would offer me breakfast, scrambled eggs. And I had become a vegetarian. Yeah, it was my own idea. And I said, I don't eat scrambled eggs. And they would have turkey on Thanksgiving, you know. Anyway, that's all there was. So I said, look, I want to become your student full time. Stay with you and so on. He said, okay. He said, but I'm going on vacation. This was in June. He said, I'm going to vacation. I'm going up to Canada, St. Lawrence Seaway. We have an island there. And I'm going to be there for few months, and then I'll come back in September and then we can, I said, okay. I said, well, why can't I come with you? He said, no, he said, they're just old ladies, you know. You know, I was like the first young person to take interest. You know, the Ramakrishna, they play organ music and, you know, he would wear a suit and he just put on a saffron smock over this suit, and he would wear these wingtip shoes, you know. You know, he wasn't India, he was more New York. So that was June, so then I met Prabhupada in August, so. But we all had become very influenced, very much influenced by Ramakrishna philosophy. And Prabhupada used to speak a lot about Ramakrishna in those early days because we were all into it. Kirtananda, Hayagriva, everyone was involved. And I just read Prabhupada was saying that this Ramakrishna movement that was put up by the caste Brahmins to defeat Srila Bhakti Siddhanta's movement there in the 1920s in Calcutta. Our biggest enemies, starting from the time of Lord Chaitanya, actually are the caste Brahmins. You know, it's the caste Brahmins who got the Kazi to break the mridangas for Lord Chaitanya. The Kazi, he didn't care. These people going out in the streets chanting, I don't care. But the caste Brahmins, they hated it. Confirmed. So, and of course, Bhaktisiddhanta, the caste Brahmins were so much against Bhaktisiddhanta that they wanted to assassinate him. And they bribed the policeman, the police chief, to shoot Bhaktisiddhanta. You know that story? And the policeman went to Bhaktisiddhanta and told him that, you know, our business is to take bribes and to do these things, but we can't shoot a sadhu. That we can't do. So he warned Bhaktisiddhanta. And this story was told by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta directly to Srila Prabhupada. So Prabhupada always gave great emphasis to, so the caste Brahmins. Actually, now I was just reading, Prabhupada said this whole creation of Pakistan started by the caste Brahmins. Because the caste Brahmins, they hated the Sudras. And then the Sudras, they became Muslim. So the caste Brahmins then hated the Muslims. And then so the Muslims had to, you know, create their own country. And there'll be forever, there'll be animosity.
Teachings, caste Brahmanism?
Well, they put him up, they didn't preach Brahminism, but they put him up. It's the Brahmins who put him up as he is supposed to be an incarnation of Lord Chaitanya, Ramakrishna. They put him up as being an avatar or something. Although he was actually a pujari in a Kali temple. Somehow he became Chaitanya. Because the Brahmins, they were against Bhaktisiddhanta's movement. So they wanted to counter it with their own Lord Chaitanya. So the big enemies are the caste Brahmins and then the Radhakund Babajis. You know, Bhaktisiddhanta was very, very famous, well known. He came to Vrindavan. He came in a limousine, you know, open car. And wore shoes and overcoat and he just infuriated the Radhakund Babajis. He went to speak at all the Babajis came to speak, and you know they all thought he's going to speak on Ras Lila or something. Instead, he spoke on the Upanishad. He didn't even speak Bhagavad Gita. The Radhakund Babajis, they don't like Bhagavad Gita. Only Ras Lila. So Bhaktisiddhanta, he didn't even speak Bhagavad Gita. He spoke Upanishads. Oh, boy. So now you're telling me that people are speaking Radhakund Babaji poverty? And I mean, you asked this Radhakund Babaji, where does he fit in our sampradaya? There doesn't fit in our sampradaya. How you can allow this speaking to go on, and I don't know. I don't think Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati would be very happy. In fact, Prabhupada told us when we came to Vrindavan, he warned us. He said, don't go to Radhakund alone. Anyone who wanted to go had to go with at least one other devotee. He said, don't go alone, as if, we would be attacked by someone and molested. So everyone was forbidden to go anywhere alone. One day Prabhupada asked, bring Tamal Krishna here, I want to speak. We looked all over the temple, we couldn't find Tamal Krishna. We looked all over, we couldn't find him. And Prabhupada, where is he? So finally 2 hours later, Tamal Krishna comes walking in. Oh, Prabhupada wants to see you, where were you? He said, well, I was at the Krishna Balaramchi, I was chanting my rounds. And Prabhupada was angry. Why you go alone? I was just chanting. Well, you don't go alone. And then Prabhupada said, you're going to these other places, but you don't know. Everything you're looking for is within this compound. Krishna Balaram Mandir. Everything you want, the whole spiritual world is within this compound. Hare Krishna. So, any questions? Yes? Yeah, that was, it was Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's disappearance in December 1969, I think. Prabhupada, we had a ceremony, the Watsika Avenue. We moved in that very day. No, Watsika. La Cienega, we were renting. But Watsika, we purchased. It was the first purchased temple. Gargamuni did it. Yeah.
All the different centers had to write to you for their majangas or their incense or whatever it was.
There was such, it would take like a month for the letter to get there, and then they wouldn't answer it for 2 months, then a month to get back. You know, I'd get the letter like 5 months later. And, you know, how to deal, you know, oh boy. And they were totally incompetent, and then to get mridangas, calls, they didn't know where to get them, and they weren't available. Because now mridangas are everywhere, but in those days, Prabhupada said at that time in Watsika Avenue, he looked at all devotees, he said, I see you all as representatives of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. That he has sent you all to me. So I have to treat you that you are my Guru Maharaj. Any other question? Yeah.
Does Prabhupada come to you in dreams?
Oh, it's a question.
Do I have dreams of Prabhupada? Not so much. Well, I was going to read a whole, Prabhupada gave many lectures on Bhaktisiddhanta's appearance and disappearance days. But there's not time. So I have programs. I got to hear all of Prabhupada's lectures on Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, 10 lectures, and an essay that Prabhupada wrote in 1952 on Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, and Prabhupada singing this song, Dushtamana. Do you know that song, Dushtamana? This is a song written by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. Dushtamana, mana is the mind. Dushta means wicked mind. And I think it was this song was aimed at the Radhakund Babaji's, because you're wicked mind, you're thinking you're so elevated in a secluded place, you're chanting Hare Krishna, but actually you're just thinking about enjoyment. You're not fooling anyone. And then we have the film biography of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. You have a question? Hare Krishna.